This segment of the Henry Rein Show is brought to you by Bike Federal, the Bitcoin ATM company, bringing Bitcoin to a location near you. Good afternoon and welcome to the Henry Rein Show here on WWPR 1490 AM, second half of the Financial Power Block every Monday starting more or less at 4.05 p.m. with Talking Markets with Mark and Andrew with All Things Markets, and then following up with the Henry Rein Show, your weekly roundup of Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, blockchain, news, and more. And what happened this week? Well, it's really all about digital payments this week. Central bank digital currencies, or CBDC, may just be one of the most important trends over the next decade, claims Visa's head of crypto. And I'm sure he has no vested interest in telling Visa that it's the most important thing and trend going on. But consumers were quick to shift their payment habits from cash to cashless during the COVID-19 crisis, so maybe he's got something in that statement.
Maybe.
On Monday, Los Angeles-based, this is a long one, we'll have to dissect this, we'll actually dissect it first thing after this. On Monday, Los Angeles-based money manager Arca began selling shares in the Arca U.S. Treasury Fund. Well, this is a crypto show. What are we talking? Well, just hold your horses. An SEC-registered closed-end fund whose digital shares, ARC coins, trade atop the Ethereum blockchain. I know you've all been demanding that to happen. And June 30th, the U.S. Senate Banking Committee held a hearing that covered a whole host of policy topics on the digitization of money and payments. I'm sure you heard it all over Fox News, MSNBC, and CNN. That was all they could talk about that day. Well, who's going to sort through all that with us? After a three-week returns, the man that was just moments ago researching the cryptocurrency blockchain world of Daytona Beach, finding out how blockchain is going to change the way mechanical engineering is going to be done, and just really following up on all the high-tech developments in this space, it's one half of the Talking Market Show. They call him Andrew there. We call him Andy. Hi, Andy.
Good afternoon, Henry.
Yes. So what was going on with crypto over in Daytona?
Not much. It's pretty not a lot of people over there.
Now, was there any race over there?
There's a small race, yeah.
But not
one of the big ones. That was in Indianapolis.
Okay. I thought that was Memorial Day.
No, Indianapolis was this weekend.
Was it postponed from? Normally, is it the Indianapolis 500 on Memorial Day?
The Indianapolis 500 is, but it's like the Pepsi 500 or something like that.
Okay. It's like altcoins. There's always another one that's going to be the most important one since the last one.
Yes, yes.
All right. Well, so.
It was the Big Machine Hand Sanitizer 400.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you. The Big Machine Hand Sanitizer 400.
Huh.
Yeah.
Did you see the
Harvick one?
FDA
wow.
or the FTC or somebody just put out a warning for some hand sanitizer?
Right. Joey Logano. He didn't come in. He came in 10th place. What the heck's up with that?
What the alcohol that's okay for hand sanitizers is like ethyl alcohol and methyl alcohol?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the one? There's no wood alcohol, is there? Isn't there something like...
There's grain alcohol.
No,
I don't remember all of them.
I don't know. This is toxic.
I'm not a chemical engineer.
You can be putting the hand sanitizer on your hands, and it can be absorbed and be toxic to you. Anyway, if you just don't buy any.
So if you don't die from COVID, you're going to die from the hand sanitizer to stop you from getting it.
Three of the four had Spanish names, Spanish language names. So I haven't bought any of those lately. I bought the high-quality Chinese hand sanitizer with the English name. So the best of both worlds there. And we've got lots more coming up here for you right now. Greg Allman there. You know, his son has a band in the style of the Allman Brothers, only updated a little bit. I mean, they play some of the
classics. Doesn't he live down here?
I think he's down here somewhere, and he's...
I've seen his son play out on the island.
Band.
I think I've seen him play out on an island.
Yeah. And I think... And Barry Oakley's son is in some band or other. They got the...
Yeah. This is a hot area yet, you know. Yeah.
All right. Well, what does all that have to do with this next story? Absolutely nothing. A Bitcoin exchange-traded fund may never receive approval from the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, but an even stranger crypto investment vehicle finally has.
What's that?
Well, it's a blockchain transferred fund. What's that?
Yeah, what is that? Yeah.
Well, Monday, Los Angeles-based money manager Arca, that would be today, began selling shares in the Arca U.S. Treasury Fund, an SEC-registered closed-end fund whose digital shares, ArcCoins, trade atop the Ethereum blockchain. Now, don't most mutual funds, when they're trading, it's just bits and bytes on a ledger somewhere electronically? Okay, so but now we got it on an Ethereum blockchain. The fund invests a majority of its assets in short-term U.S. Treasury bills and notes. The company told CoinDesk it received a, quote, notice of effectiveness on July 6th. So, okay, so it trades on top of the Ethereum blockchain as opposed to a closed database or a closed ledger system and not a distributed ledger.
We need Leonard to call in and explain all this.
Well, so I'm wondering why I want to go and put my money on a mutual fund of treasury bills when it seems like the other treasury bill mutual funds have been working okay.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Now,
there would be one benefit to it, and the only benefit that I could see is it's traded 24/7.
Do we know that?
I don't know. Most coins trade 24/7.
We're going to go deeper than you ever thought, but not that long. Not for long. We'll go deep but short. Tell them about deep but short. Okay. The launch marks the first time the crypto-skeptical SEC has allowed a fund represented by cryptographic tokens to enter the investment markets under the Investment Company Act of 1940. I haven't even... In all the three years we've been doing this, I haven't heard of that. The Investment Company Act? Heard a lot of other ones. Arca has been pushing for various forms of the ArcCoin proposal for nearly 20 months, as shown in regulatory filings. Well, you don't like this one? How about this one? Executives have previously heralded their proposed fund as a pace setter for a hybrid digital asset class. ArcCoin, somebody had some flowery prose when they wrote this thing. ArcCoin marries perhaps the investment world's least risky asset, treasuries, with blockchain, the up-and-coming tech backbone they believe will lend efficiency and security to the trading and settlement process. I think the journalist who wrote this was probably copying and pasting from the press release from the company. Right. So Arca's digital developer wing, Arca Labs, chose the Ethereum blockchain, one of the largest, I think everybody knows that, one of the largest blockchains, and the landing site of many novel, Don't worry, folks. We've only got about two or three more sentences before we might actually figure out what they're talking about. Anyway, they built this on the ERC 1404 protocol, which is different from the ERC 20 protocol, which most all these other Ethereum coins are built on. The main difference is that the ERC 1404 restricts where holders can send a token to a collection of whitelisted addresses. Whitelisted as in they're okay to be sent to, which must mean there must be everything else is a blacklisted address.
Yeah.
That's a crucial point for regulators wary of letting tokens outside the show. So in other words, they want to know, they want to be able to track it. They want to make sure there's no money laundering. I don't know what the purpose of money. Well, yeah, there would be a purpose of money laundering.
For treasury bills, yeah.
If you're trying to launder money,
you can laundry a lot. You know?
All right, there's a little bit more here. If you actually go to the press release, so the fund invests 80% of its portfolio assets in interest-bearing short-duration U.S. Treasury securities, and the accrued interest is paid directly to ArcCoin holders each quarter. So now that makes some use there if you can put it on.
So it's a security.
Distribute it through
security,
the blockchain, the interest. I mean, let's see if there's anything else here. Oh, it's built on the Ethereum blockchain, as we said. The fund is registered under the 40 Act, providing daily net asset value reporting, bankruptcy protections, periodic audited financial statements, and assets held in a statutory trust overseen by an independent board. Yeah, it could be. That's the way most mutual funds are. We just don't talk about most mutual funds, most boring mutual funds. We only talk about mutual funds that are never getting approved by the SEC yet. That offers... Now, at the bottom of the press release, they're going to tell us why this is so important. ArcCoin offers digital enterprises investors multiple use cases and widespread integration. Well, who wouldn't want that? Individuals could use ArcCoin as an alternative to the volatility in other digital assets, while financial institutions and digital asset enterprise could use ArcCoin for clearing and settlement, lending, treasury management, and payments in industries where banking has created friction. So I think parsing through that, because the first thing I thought about, well, why not use any other stablecoin if that's what you want to do? But the fact is, if you're playing in the SEC sandbox, you probably can't do that.
Yeah.
So they finally got something that they can label as digital, they can label as blockchain, they can say it's built on Ethereum, and the SEC will let them settle payments and transfers, et cetera, on there. Good luck to y'all.
So that's a green light for Ethereum.
Well, as long
of course,
as
Bitcoin
04.
Yeah, true.
another thing, the first time I've heard of it in 3 years here. So useful. Isn't Ethereum going to proof of stake here soon, isn't it? I hadn't switched over yet.
Yeah.
They're still working out the sharding and stuff. For a long time, you've been working on sharding.
Oh, yeah.
You always had trouble with that. Yeah. You can just find someone to really help you with your sharding.
I'd be happy.
Yeah, so you wouldn't have to go to Daytona. Central Bank Digital Currencies, or CBDC, we're segueing here, may just be one of the most important trends over the next decade. Well, let me take a drink of water here, because obviously I am going to be stumbling and stiffing on my tongue. Okay.
There you go. That sounded good, too.
Yes, well, that's water. All right. Maybe one of the most important trends over the next decade, claims Visa's head of crypto. It's C-U-Y. Coy Sheffield is the head of crypto at Visa. Now, I know, I wouldn't be so shallow to make fun of the person's name. You don't even get to pick your name. But really, Mr. and Mrs. Sheffield, Coy? C-U-Y? Is that like a fish or something?
It must have been one of those 60s childs.
No,
he's so coy. Let's call him that.
Maybe it was the mom's maiden name.
Could be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't just have to take
our
name,
call him McCoy,
honey.
So we just call him Coy.
He won't be just a Sheffield. He'll be a Coy in a Sheffield. And he will make pronouncements about the greatest things that are going to happen in our lifetime.
Yeah.
Anyway, he tweeted, which is how all great statements come, as governments evaluate CBDC, the path they decide to take will have major implications for privacy, monetary, I thought there was a comma there, monetary sovereignty, geopolitics and financial inclusion, as well as global adoption of crypto dollars and Bitcoin. Well, it sounds very important when you put it that way. I'd argue that central bank digital currency is one of the most important trends for the future of money and payments over the next decade. Regardless of anyone's personal views of whether it's good or bad, the reality is that the global interest in it is not going away. And he's sure of that.
How sure is he?
Well, someone once told me, never try and change someone's mind whose livelihood depends on it. And I think Coy is making his livelihood being the crypto spokesperson and head of the crypto division of Visa, which I'm sure there's stuff that goes on there. But I haven't seen a lot of products coming from Visa about this yet, but they're ready when it is. But someplace that you see a lot of Bitcoin activity and a lot of digital payments and a lot of high performance in the stock market, and that was on fire today, is Square. I mean, it's been on fire for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a mix on Square, but I saw something over there while I was over and doing Square. What was it?
In Daytona?
In Daytona. And it kind of caught my eye. I can't remember what the hell it was.
Was it a merchant that was using
Square? Yeah, it was a merchant that was using Square. And I can't remember what they did, but I was like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Hmm.
I can't remember what it was, though, so that's
cool. We're
going
to talk about why Square has been on fire there, but before that, its connection to Bitcoin. Square Crypto, an independent corporate entity formed to support open-source Bitcoin community, announced it is building a decentralized Bitcoin design community. Okay, so that was a lot of word salad right there. But think about the fact that Microsoft has open-sourced so many of their products.
Oh, yeah.
But you don't see anybody taking the Azure Cloud or the SQL Server database and making money like Microsoft makes.
Yeah.
What they let you do is you can play with our toys because we have found that when you play with our toys,
you buy them.
More people want to play with our toys.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think I could probably rephrase that for Square. Square that sells Bitcoin. We have found at Square that when people develop things for Bitcoin, more people buy Bitcoin. As stated by Square CEO Jack Dorsey in March 2019, over a year ago, Square Crypto is supporting underfunded areas in the Bitcoin ecosystem, including design. According to Jack, great design will help more people access this technology faster and better. Well, true. And we'll make a lot of money off it. Instead of hiring one full-time designer, Square Crypto is going to let you be the free worker. We'll be pointing talent towards an open-source design community made up of freelance designers interested in Bitcoin but unsure where to focus their time and skills, as well as designers working full-time at Bitcoin companies. So they're going to take the best and brightest ideas from other companies and let them play in their sandbox.
That's right.
Anyone can participate in the community by joining Bitcoin Design Slack Workspace. So Jack is getting behind Slack.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was wondering, because I of everything I've ever seen about Slack, and I hear how great it is, I'm like, why can't you just do this with Microsoft?
You can. But now.
But if you're a billionaire and you don't want something getting locked into somebody's other sandbox, you want it locked into, so you go to Slack, because Slack is not going to be taking over the world of Bitcoin like you will, Jack. But more power to you. It's doing well. And good things will come of all this for people that hold Bitcoin, I'm sure. But lots of good things have been coming to Square in these days and times of COVID-19 and all the other anxious events of our day. Consumers were quick to shift their payment habits from cash to cashless during the COVID-19 crisis, according to a report by Square. Speaking of never trying to change the opinion of someone whose livelihood, digital payments are going great.
Yeah, right.
Just ask us that make digital payments. Everybody should be doing this. In fact,
well, you know, I think a lot of people are going to that. You know, Apple Pay, you know, that you can hook your credit card up to Apple Pay and pay anywhere. Mm-hmm. And you can also use the Square to use your Apple Pay.
Is connected to it.
Yeah.
And I've actually started using cash more because I don't like to touch the touch screens.
Can you think about that? All the people that come through, touch, this person, this person. That dollar bill in my pocket, somebody had it before me, but 100 people didn't have it between the time that person touched it and I touched it.
That's the nice thing about Apple Pay. You don't have to touch the screen.
As long as...
You only have to touch your phone.
Does 7-Eleven have Apple Pay?
I believe so. I think some of them do. It just depends on which franchise it is. But I know Publix put it in because they didn't have it.
Why didn't they put in Google Pay?
Well, they already had Google Pay.
Oh.
So they added Apple Pay.
We have a duopoly.
A duopoly, yeah. Pretty much. Square Pay, Square could be, the next one.
It could. I wonder if, I'm trying to think from a retailer's point of view is, if the Square app is so downloaded, I would think a lot of, supposedly the unbanked are the beneficiaries of Square app, which means they probably don't have a real credit card. I wonder if it would provide more, make your business give it a little edge, like compared to Winn-Dixie or for those people who know our regional grocery stores as opposed or to Whole Foods.
Or Piggly Wiggly.
Or Kroger's.
Kroger's.
Albertsons have an IPO.
Yeah.
Well,
they're popular. They're actually, you know what, though? They're actually very popular out west.
Yeah. But.
They didn't do good in Florida. Publix just destroyed everybody.
I still don't.
I mean, where do you shop? I shop at Publix.
For most everything, I shop at Publix. But Winn-Dixie has a few items that
they
have
those good sales, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so back to the topic.
Back to the real
Square,
good stuff.
And it's dominance in the cashless payment. In the 7 weeks from March 1st to April 23rd, which is, for those of you that have a hard time remembering, that's like the beginning of the frenzy about COVID-19, back when we called it the coronavirus. In 7 weeks from March 1st to April 23rd, the percent of cashless Square sellers nearly quadrupled from 8% to 31%. That's a pretty good, that's an interesting number because that's the retailer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess does that mean there's a lot of cash business? Because they didn't have, they could have been doing MasterCard and Visa, but why would you do Square if you're not going to, suspicious. One Square merchant who never had heard of the concept of not taking cash, evidently.
Yeah. It was mind-boggling. Yeah.
Yes, we've gone from all cash to cashless in 2019. Now it's cashless for 90% of her transaction. 69% of Square merchants think that the COVID-19 crisis will accelerate the adoption of cashless payments in the U.S. Pretty much. And the number of years they believe it will take the U.S. to turn into a cashless society has shrunk from 19 in 2019 to 13. What person is that?
But, how do they come up? It'd be 19 years. 2038, it'll be cashless. Who does that?
I guess not until somebody asks you.
Yeah.
And let's see, who were they?
Why don't you just say, by 2030 potentially be, cashless system, Reasonable.
All right. Well, we're on the speed round today for this show because we're on our last story here, but it all ties into the same thing. So just a quick review. We talked about the first blockchain-based mutual fund built on the Ethereum 1404 that just started trading today. It's basically if you want to trade your treasury funds and you really want to do it on a blockchain, good for you. You can go to Arca. We talked about how Coy Sheffield, the head of crypto at Visa, thinks central bank digital currencies are going to be the cat's meow in the years to come. I did that purposely dating a saying. I haven't heard that in quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
The bee's knees. You got one? I was like looking over you. You got an old affirmative kind of saying?
Bee's knees?
You haven't ever heard that?
Something with the bees.
You didn't have a grandparent?
Oh, yeah, I did. Yeah, two of them.
Good. I'm glad you came.
The only one I remember was the Road to Hell's Paved with Good Intentions.
No, that's not something you say that's okay. good.
Okay.
That's what you say to your grandchild to keep them from doing something fun.
Yeah.
All right, let's just... So anyway, we talk about Square and the open source way that they're going to skim all the good ideas out of Bitcoin. And how they've been profiting with a tear in their eye over all the businesses coming their way over COVID-19 and their concern. And, by the way, Jack's probably in Africa right now helping those people prepare for COVID-19 and with a free face mask with every Square merchant.
Square merchant, so, yeah. That would be a free face mask.
Actually, with Jumia, which is like the African Amazon, they had an explosion in their growth with merchants too. In fact, they have a situation because even though there is extensive delivery, a lot of people still want to pick up somewhere, but they want to keep their contacts with people narrow. So they have like a neighborhood designated drop-off, which is a real person's shop. And you know, sort of what Kohl's tried to do with Amazon.
Yes.
Only this is working. June 30th, the U.S. Senate Banking Committee held a hearing that covered a whole host of policy topics on the digitization of money and payments in what was described as a move closer to the U.S. digital dollar. The hearing also covered a broad swath of issues that impact tomato, crypto and blockchain space. Now, who says it was a move closer to the U.S. digital dollar? Because the U.S. Senate Banking Committee doesn't have a whole lot. I would say if you got the Treasury Department and the Fed Reserve talking about this, although we will bring the Fed into this conversation in just a moment because that was the one most interesting thing in this article, you're probably a lot more on the way to getting a digital dollar than the Senate committee holding a hearing and talking to people. Chairman Mike Crapo, Republican of Utah, of the Senate Banking Committee, described how COVID-19 has forced Americans to go to all digital at a rapid pace. Well, we just covered that already. So he said his committee's keen. There's another dated reference. We're keen to learn about new technologies that could replace our current payment system. In his opening remarks, he talked about a new type of cryptocurrency, stable coins and central bank digital currencies, as a new type of cryptocurrency that has emerged aimed at achieving these benefits while marginalizing the volatility of some of its predecessors. I guess he's talking about Bitcoin. Stable coins, which may be issued by a central entity, deliver price stability by having their value pegged to another asset like commercial bank deposits or government-issued bonds. Oh, that probably gave ARCA a little butterfly in their tummy over that one. Hi. He also said, as I said in our last digital currency hearing, it seems to me that these and similar innovations are inevitable, beneficial, and the U.S. should lead in their development. And I would hazard to say, with the status of the Chinese yuan digital currency, we, as far as implementation and rolling it out, we're a little bit behind on that. Well, on the other side of the aisle, the minority ranking member is Senator Sherrod Brown, a Democrat of Ohio. Now, I got to tell you, Sherrod Brown, when I've watched some of these other hearings, you know, this is one of those things that's a little bit different from the House committee where you get the, unless Senator Warren is talking or something like that. But in the most part, they're more, both sides, as far as banking, are more in the middle because they wouldn't be on the banking committee if they weren't trying to influence banking. But whereas in the House committee, it gets a little more strident and there's more irons in the fire, to take another old cliche. We're just channeling everybody's grandparents today. Actually, people are out there saying, you're the grandpa, boomer.
Yeah.
Anyway, Sherrod Brown, he was a little bit more agitated. His opening statement was exploring the plight of both female and male brown and black Americans.
That's a quote. Who, as America's essential workers, face barriers to banking services that result in higher costs and making payments for those who can afford it the least. Probably poor white Americans and poor Asian Americans, too, for that matter. Just poor Americans are the ones that are unbanked. Brown's solution was for the Fed, this is the interesting part, was for the Federal Reserve to offer banking services laid out in his new bill called Banking for All Act. The bill would create free bank accounts at both traditional banks and post offices with no service fees and instant access to paychecks and COVID-19 stimulus payments. So I'm sure that the traditional banks are going, just doing flips for the idea of doing a federal bank account with no fees. So I don't know what the incentive is for them. Post offices also, I'm sure, are thrilled with the idea. Well, it gives them another reason to stick around. And but the as an alternative, which is not exactly
what... it's one step closer to government owning the banks.
Owning the bank accounts.
Well, being the banker.
Well, that's not real. We're doing your checking account.
It's well, that's still, you know, they're in control of the banking. I mean, it's first step, and then the next thing you know, they're doing loans, and then they're, you know. So you have a bank that...
I understand that you can see that pathway in your... But I'm also seeing that when you look at how the stimulus checks... If everybody had... a digital account. Let me do the Henry Raines, what's the name of this thing? The Henry Raines Get Your Money for All Act.
All right.
If your Social Security number had a digital account tied to the Treasury Department of the Federal Reserve, so I'm talking something different than a bank account, but... If you had that mechanism now,
isn't that the whole purpose of having a Social Security number for the Treasury Department, the IRS?
There's a lot of reasons for having a Social Security.
But I'm saying that was the original purpose.
No, because for Social Security was back in the 30s.
But the IRS already isn't IRS part of the Treasury Department, right?
Yes.
Okay, so they already have your Social Security number.
Right, but let's back up and clear that one point out. Social Security numbers came in, I don't know, I'll have to check. I thought it came in with Social Security.
I think they did.
But the income tax came in with, right around the 1910s or somewhere around in there? I wonder what they used. Because it doesn't seem like...
It actually was probably an honor system. It was an honor system.
Well...
Okay. We will
research that. Okay, so I forget whose turn it was. You were trying to make a point, and I was trying to make a point.
So they already have your Social Security number, so they already have, you know, a way to give you a direct payment.
Well, it has to go to either through the mail or to a bank account now, or a Cash App. Now you can do it to the Cash App.
Cash App, Square, or something like that. So I don't know. I think it's one step closer to the government being the banker, and I don't know if that's really good.
Well, that's not my bill. My bill is, you can change your bank. You can go from Cash App to a bank. You can have nothing. You can go back and forth. But if the interaction financially between you and the federal government on as far as the flow to you, whether it's a stimulus check or a Social Security check, or, you know, sometime we have a COVID crisis and they want to stimulate, there would be a mechanism for that. That also, this one is really outside the box. Pregnant pause while everybody says, oh, Henry, what's that? This, you know, everybody talks about, you know, the technology. Almost everything, Google, Amazon, all the technology that's based on satellite, your cable, everything was financed by DARPA, the defense agency that finances experimental stuff. Like, Virgin Galactic would not be Virgin Galactic if DARPA hadn't funded rocketry after World War II. the stuff that the private sector doesn't want to do, we have funded with tax dollars.
I think some of the stuff that we did with tax dollars is, you know, led to new technology.
Right. Well, this is the okay. So that means if Google and Amazon and the cable systems and the aviation system, a lot of that is based on stuff that tax dollars went. We should be getting stock. When we're born, we should be getting stock in some of those companies. They should have to put aside, if they're using the technology, they should have to put aside a certain amount of stock. I know, you don't think so. But that would be able to finance, if you had your share, or your parents' share of the tax money that got put in.
I think you'd be better off through schools.
What?
Through colleges.
Ah.
Yeah. When the best colleges
are still there. Let's finish this story here. Then we can get into the other stuff. Then we'll be done with this. In a blistering critique of Bitcoin that made President Trump's based out of thin air comments look mild, Brown remarked that we're talking Sherrod Brown, the Democrat from Ohio. He heard all kinds of promises about how cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin or Ethereum would fundamentally change our relationship with the banking system. And he goes on and talks about everything I've heard, and it didn't happen. Well, it didn't happen because until you have de minimis exemptions for capital gains, nobody's going to use Bitcoin to pay for anything if they have to keep track of every coffee they have for that. Yeah. Coinbase should come up with an app for that. And then they would lock you in golden handcuffs because you wouldn't want to move your Bitcoin out of there if you were using it for payments. Because you don't want to like try and hope Kraken or Gemini knows where you spent your coffee money. Okay, so back this up. Since I wasn't planning on saying this, let's see if we even have any point of agreement here. Tax dollars have funded almost every cutting-edge technology that has grown to the giant corporations that dominate global commerce now.
That's a lot of them, yeah. I agree with that.
Can you think of a high-tech one that wasn't, you know, the Internet was DARPA-funded?
Well, there's a lot of the biopharmaceuticals and stuff like that, gene editing and all that. That was private companies.
We'll put a fence around that one.
Yeah, and so then you look at
So venture capital did the biotechs, right? That's what you're saying. So those people get a return on their investment.
Yes.
So if tax dollars fund the technology, why don't taxpayers get a return on their investment?
I mean, you make a valid argument. I'm not going to argue that, but
I'm
just going to say that. You know, here's the thing, though, is that a lot of these come out of colleges. A lot of great advancements come out of colleges, and then they're used by the government. So I don't know if that's entirely true.
Narrow it down to one then.
Because I'll give you an example. My best friend in college, they came up with a way of I don't know how they do. They wash. When they're doing circuit boards, they actually do some, it's not engraving, etching, and they use a wash and stuff like that. And they were able to come up with a procedure to make the smallest, at that time, circuit boards that were, I forget, I can't remember all the intricacies because it was 30 years ago, but they came up with that and they up the USF. And I think that probably, you know.
All right, let's
was
let's,
used by, you know.
Folks, we aren't going to agree, but let's try one more example.
Okay.
How about satellite telemetry? That was funded by the Defense Department, right? Tax dollars behind that.
Okay.
So let's just say, hypothetically, the Defense Department got the patents on that.
And they probably do.
Okay. But somehow...
they may be getting...
Scientific Atlanta and Raytheon and all those ones have created products using that technology. Now, if a private company had... provided that technology, there would have to be royalties or some way of compensating.
Well, maybe there are. Well, I would rather see royalties going in. The government comes up with something like that. Now, here's an alternate way of thinking it. If government does come up with something through government-sponsored...
Tax-dollar-sponsored.
Tax-dollar-sponsored, investments, that the revenues from
The The products that come out of
the products that come out. So if Google wants it and they have to license it, then that should go to the IRS. I mean,
right. So let's just say that
we should all get a tax cut.
Okay. So let's. I actually know the man. He's probably passed away by now. That did satellite technology for Raytheon. Then he formed Scientific Atlanta, and you know, so and built the cable industry out from that. So let's say back when he was building that out, he was actually the father of the cable industry, like Bill Gates is the father of the personal computer. If he had to take part of that as a licensing fee, he had to set aside, you know, 4%, 2% of the stock. And that went to into a escrow account at the Treasury. And that... Whenever that then, and you now multiply that time 100 or 200 or 300 different companies like that. All right, so now there's this big pool, basically a mutual fund, that the Treasury has of all these companies that grow decade over decade. Instead of you know, necessarily paying taxes into Social Security, what if that that fund of mutual funds was set up as a certain tiny fraction. It was a retirement fund for every American citizen. Then, when people are trying to convince American citizens that we have to be pro-business, it would be in their self-interest to want to see corporate America grow and make profit because they could directly see the benefit they were having. And think again, that tiny little bit that you got when you were born that you can't access until you retire, how much would that have grown?
Yeah, and I think, well, okay, but here let me ask you this. What technologies have the U.S. government come up with lately?
Why lately?
The reason I say that is because there's always a necessity. So the necessity was, for a lot of these products, satellite, and that was war. War was...
Well, that's usually whatever.
Okay, so innovation comes from war. And so
go ahead. I'm
I mean, that would be it. I mean, even the Internet came up from...
DARPA.
DARPA, which, you know, was trying to communicate. So...
What is DARPA technology? We'll ask Google. We'll follow this up, because I know you don't want to go through this, but I think we would find... Oh, here's one. DARPA project list. Let's see if... Now, these are more like the new stuff. Well, drones... Drones came from...
Yeah, but drones have been... Yeah, but drones... Yes, but there was private sectors. It was private companies that came up with the technologies.
I'm pretty sure that there's government money there somewhere.
Well, the government may have said, hey, we want you to build a drone, and the company said, okay, we can do this, and...
Neural implant to treat memory loss? That's an interesting DARPA project.
Click on it. What's it say?
Well, then now you're going to make the Packard Bell work really hard on this. Well, it's opening now.
I like the one below it.
Which one? Remote control of brain activity? Now that sounds like a military
one. Now that sounds like a military one, yeah. I mean, that sounds like government sponsored there, you know.
DARPA's upward falling payload, like Lancaster's Wobbler. DARPA 6, I don't know all these. That's DARPA smart video cams. That's another one. We've had satellite camera technology. I'm sure some companies have used that. So I want a good capitalistic way to fund the people's retirement. I don't know why you're doing all this socialist stuff, but you don't want that.
Okay, we'll read it. I'll read the top of it. What's it say?
Awarded Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory up to $2.5 million.
Okay, so they awarded a private company again to...
It's the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory.
Yeah, but isn't that a private company?
Well, I guess we'll have to Google that now,
college.
Andrew.
I don't know.
I was trying to get you out of here with a little bit of space, but that's okay. We'll find this stuff out because our audience cares. We're going to search Google for that now. It's Wikipedia saying over here. It's a federal research facility. Your tax dollars.
Founded by the University of California. There you go.
Well, it's founded, but it's...
But what I'm saying is it's part of a college. You know, so you...
Tax dollars. We should be getting return on our tax dollars. We should be getting return on our grandparents' tax dollars.
I don't know.
Penny wise, pound foolish.
Why don't you just get rid of taxes and let us invest our own money?
Well, then we wouldn't have all these cool inventions.
Sure we would.
They don't give us a choice. They take our tax dollars and they do what they want, and then other people make up the profit from them. We're the venture capitalists for almost everything in this country. So, why? Why did I ever bring it up? All right.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of private companies out there would have said, oh, yeah, give us $25 million and we'll do the research.
Trying to get into Bitcoin but don't know where to start? Bite Federal ATMs make it easy. Safe, secure, and reliable, a Bite Federal ATM introduces you to cryptocurrency investing with a method you're familiar with at a real physical location. If you've ever used a bank ATM, then you're ready to step up to a Bite Federal ATM and start building your digital assets. Located throughout Florida and Georgia, there's a Bite Federal ATM near you. Go to BiteFederal.com to find a location for you. That's BiteFederal.com, and you'll find a real phone number, a real email, and real people you've heard live on the Henry Rain Show.